All right.
So go ahead, Sarah.
Thank you very much for coming today. And I'd like to take just a minute to thank my co-authors, Deb McCullough and Bert Craig from Michigan State. So talk a little bit about ash trees in landscapes. There are 37.9 million trees in urban landscapes across the United States, and in some cities that makes up between 20 and 50% of the urban canopy. Ash trees are very tolerant to a wide range of sites and environments, and they were at one time popular replacement trees for American elm. And until emerald ash borer came on the scene back in 2002, they had very few insect pests. Emerald ash borer came on, like I said, in 2002 when it was discovered. It had probably been in the area for at least 10 years before it was discovered. It is a native insect to Asia. It is an agrilis species. It attacks only ash trees, so only trees in the Fraxinus genus. And the larvae are what cause the damage to the trees. So they are phloem borers, and they create small serpentine galleries underneath the bark, and over time that girdles the trees and causes tree death, sometimes in as little as 2 to 3 years. So this is a current infestation map of the United States. We're at 24 states currently. We get emails every couple of weeks, and it's sort of terrifying to open them to find out where this bug is now. But it's also found in Ontario and Quebec, and all of those little red dots are county findings. And you can see over in Colorado, that little teeny tiny space there, that was probably firewood movement. So every time I give a talk about emerald ash borer, I try to encourage you, please don't move firewood, it does cause damage. Ash trees and emerald ash borer, we have lost tens of millions of trees just in Michigan alone and across the United States. It is quite devastating for those of you who have seen the damage that this insect has caused. In some areas in Michigan and Ohio, we have tree mortality as high as 99%. So really a very damaging insect. It's important, especially for this particular talk, in Asia, EB colonizes stress trees, right? So in its native environment, the trees share a coevolutionary history, right? So they kind of grew up together, and the trees are able to resist the insect when it attacks. But here in North America, our trees are not resistant, right? And so the insect will attack both healthy and stressed trees, although it prefers stressed trees. So the big question is, we've dealt with this now for over 10 years, and one of the biggest questions that we have is, how do we keep urban ash trees healthy? And I don't know, have any of you seen sweater trees? This is kind of a new thing that we're seeing some in urban areas. So other than putting sweaters on our trees, we use a lot of systemic insecticides. Amimectin benzoate is an excellent pesticide that we use. It has a 3 to 4 year efficacy and about 99% control. But tree health is important, right? These treatments are done with trunk injections. Right? And the trees have to be healthy enough to translocate the insecticide from the trunk up into the leaves where the adult beetles are feeding. So tree health is very important. Fertilizers, we see a lot of advertisements for fertilizers for urban trees to keep them healthy. This is a very site-specific type thing, right? Fertilizers can cause problems, right? They can increase the amount of nitrogen in leaves, which could make them actually more attractive to insects. So we don't advocate the use of fertilizers very much. And the point of the talk that I'm giving today is talking about plant growth regulators and using plant growth regulators as a means of kind of increasing tree health or reducing tree stress. Pacobutrazol is the name of the product that we use. It's abbreviated throughout here with just the letters PB. It is a gibberellin inhibitor. So it doesn't reduce the number of cells that we have, but it reduces cell elongation, right? So it reduces the growth of the trees, typically above ground. And this was first started to be used by utility companies, right? Utility companies, this picture on the top here shows how linesmen and these companies really do fight trees often, right? The trees get in the way, they overgrow. Somehow they have to keep those lines clean. So they apply pacobutrazol to reduce the growth and it causes not only a reduction in growth, but then they don't have to get rid of all of the clippings and the extra biomass that they've had to prune off. So they really did start kind of using PV as a method to reduce growth and change the way that they work in the lines. So Pack-the-Butrazol reduces canopy, shoot, and radial growth. All right, so pretty much anything above ground, it can reduce the growth of those areas. And it can cause an allocation shift between above ground and below ground biomass. So if you're reducing the growth on the top part of the tree, you are getting additional growth, assuming you have the same photosynthetic rates, in the roots. All right, so they're storing more carbohydrates. So why would we use Pack-the-Butrazol on ash trees? We do terrible things to our urban trees, right? We plant them in small spaces. They get water stressed. They get heat stressed. They are truly not treated very well. So a lot of times ash trees in sidewalk cubes and long streets, they outgrow their space first, and that causes a great deal of stress. Water stress compaction, right? Soil compaction is another problem for urban trees. And insects and pathogens, right? And again, in this particular case, we're talking about emerald ash borer. And in insect interactions, we have the growth defense hypothesis. So does a tree grow or does it defend itself? And there's been a lot of research. You know, sometimes the growth defense hypothesis is proven, or not proven, but it works, and sometimes it doesn't, right? So what we wanted to do is kind of see if we could trick the trees into having an enhanced resistance by reducing their growth and giving them more energy to maybe defend themselves. So our study objective for this particular portion of our research was basically in the wake of EAB, how do we keep our ash trees healthy? All right, how do we keep them healthy enough to treat them with insecticides? How do we keep them healthy enough to maybe resist emerald ash borer in urban landscapes? And you can see this picture here is taken in Toledo, Ohio. Dan Herms took this, who is an EAB researcher. And the picture there on the left shows a beautiful urban canopy down the street, lots of beautiful trees, lots of shade. And then that was taken in August of 2006. And then 3 years later, all of those trees are dead, and we've lost not only the trees, but the ecosystem services that they provide. So we have an ash plantation at the Tree Research Center, which is in Okemos, Michigan. We had 21 trees each of 5 different species. We had black, blue, green, white, and Manchurian ash. So the first 4 of those, everything but Manchurian ash there, is a North American species. The Manchurian ash is an Asian species, and it is at least less preferable to emerald ash borer than the North American species. So we picked these 5 trees species because they are very evolutionarily diverse. If you look at the phylogenetic tree, they come off at very different places along the tree. And they are also, I wouldn't say exactly common, but they are used in landscapes. Right? So they're not uncommon in landscapes. Despite our best efforts to protect our trees, you can kind of see our version of the tree sweater here on the left-hand picture. We wrapped all of our trees with tree wrap to try to keep the eggs from hatching and the larvae from burrowing in. We were successful on only 3 of our species. All of our black ash trees and most of our green ash trees died from emerald ash borer infestation before we were even able to start these experiments. So from here on out, I'll be talking only about blue, Manchurian, and white ash. Our treatments, we use Pack-the-Butrazol shortstop, all right, 22.3% active ingredient. We applied it as a soil drench. Treatments of PB typically take about 1 year to become visible, right? So the first year you don't see a lot of reduction in growth because it sits in the soil. It can sit in the soil roughly about 3 years. It takes a little while for the trees to kind of react to it. So we only used the PB treatment 1 time. We also added some fertilizer in 2010 and 2011, and we had a control group. Foliar measurements, so we wanted to find out what the trees were doing. Right, we looked at photosynthesis, we looked at transpiration, and we did that with a LICOR 6400. We also measured relative chlorophyll content with a SPAD meter, and we looked at individual leaf area with a program called Winfolia. And leaf area is one of the main growth attributes that paclobutrazole is supposed to reduce. So it's supposed to reduce the size of the leaves and possibly even increase the thickness there. So we wanted to measure that. No good tree study would be complete without a destructive harvest, right? That's a good word. In September of 2011, we cut everything down. Right? We cut them down before the leaves started to fall in the fall, and we collected all the woody biomass, so everything from about 10 inches above the graft union. We cut everything out and put it in a heater, dried it all out, same with the leaves. So we did this on an individual tree basis. We also did the roots, and any of you who have dealt with roots before, my former advisor said, oh, you'll never work with roots again. Yeah, famous last words. So we dug up all of the root balls with a tree spade. We used an air spade then to get most of the soil off of the roots, and then we used a hose to get the last little bit off. And then two lucky undergraduates got to take each one of those each one of those root balls, and they dissected them into coarse and fine roots. We also looked at radial and shoot growth. Basically, for radial growth, we measured tree rings, right? And then for shoot growth, we measured the twig growth based on the leaf scars. So we were able to do a post treatment measurement for the years for growth of 2010 and 2011. And pre-treatment growth, which was 2008 and 2009. Results: our photosynthesis and gas exchange rates were similar within species and not different across the treatments. The leaflets from the paclobutrazole trees were anywhere between 19 and 25% smaller than our fertilized and control trees. Within species, paclobutrazole did not affect chlorophyll content, so we did not see any difference in leaf color. And fertilizer only increased the color of the leaves in blue ash. So blue ash was the only species that reacted to fertilizer growth. So this is a graph of the radial growth, and I split this out between species and treatments. And you can see across the top that there were differences in the species themselves. Blue ash grows quite a bit smaller, has less radial growth than the white and Manchurian ash. And you can also see that the paclobutrazole trees were 33% smaller than the control and fertilized trees. And for our biomass allocation, paclobutrazole increased root biomass by 10%. Right? So that's a pretty good percentage of a reallocation from above to below ground biomass. So conclusions: paclobutrazole did not affect gas exchange. It did reduce leaf area, radial growth, shoot growth in Manchurian trees, and the root to total biomass ratios. And fertilizer in this particular case did not change a whole lot. So our trees in the plantation were getting lots of good nutrients there. We did have some differences among species, which are important. A lot of studies look at one species only when studying paclobutrazole. Looking at three helped us learn a lot about the different species that we will be using in landscapes. So that was important. Our implications: remember, the whole point of this is to decide if adding this growth regulator could reduce the amount of stress that ash trees deal with in landscapes. And it does reduce growth. Right? So if we can reduce the growth of those trees in those confined, not so spectacular growing spaces, we can reduce their stress and perhaps make them less attractive to emerald ash borer. This just shows the differences in larval infestation, right? You can see we had roughly about 225 larvae per square meter in black ash and green ash, so it's no wonder that they died. And finally, our last, what we're working on now is we have about 132 trees in three different locations, five different species, much larger trees this time that we have treated with paclobutrazole, and we're looking to see if some of this reduction in growth, we can use that to decrease the amount of insecticides that we're using in these trees. So with that, I will happily take any questions.
We've got 1 minute for any questions. Please ask them.
All right, thank you very much.